Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before. And we're here with Baylor.
Shadow Baylor.
Shadow Baylor. Shadow Mackenzie.
Yes!
Shadow Angus.
Hello.
Shadow Jeanette.
The answer was a
And bright and bubbly Lisa.
I prefer Metal Tulip, if you don't mind.
Bright and bubbly Alex.
Hey.
And I'm Justin. And we're watching The Good Life today.
Felicity Treacle Kendall. That's it.
Oh, you forgot.
1975. Yeah, so it's early. Oof,
that is old.
So, Angus, this was your pick. What is The Good Life?
The Good Life is basically a TV show made by the BBC in the 70s that depicts two people as they stray away from what's considered the day-to-day norm of the work, sleep, repeat sort of thing. And they go, you know what, I don't want to do that anymore. And they basically turn their suburban household into a small, like, I guess, farm?
A
self-sustaining sort of thing. So he quits his job. He walks away from the lifestyle and goes, nah, the hell with that. I'm going self-sufficient is the term they use.
Which these days wouldn't be a weird thing.
Yeah, but probably not in the suburban
In the 70s. Mm. Like, you've got people and they'll have a hobby farm and instead of having lawn down, they'll fill it up with a veggie garden and things like
hobby
that.
Hobby farms became really popular because of this TV show. They popularised the hobby farm. And a lot of people did try to at least do semi-self-sufficiency. So a lot of our teachers at high school are all fans of The Good Life and all trying to be semi-self-sufficient.
So my parents, their first house was this tiny little house at an estate in Paralowie, and then they did the whole move to a couple of acres on the outskirts of Gawler. It's now probably middle of Gawler, and did the whole hobby farm, live off the land experience, and that was, what, early 80s? So that's
definitely would have been in that generation that inspired those TV shows. And that now we've got a return to this with COVID. Has people back. So I just got a message from Alice saying they're bringing lots of eggs because they've got so many chickens now.
Oh, yeah.
And in the UK, it was a big... In the city, everyone was making sourdough and things like that. Yeah. It was,
We blame The Good Life. They had a pretty stellar cast, really, in this, didn't they? They had Richard Brize, Felicity Kendall, Penelope Keith playing Margot.
She was in everything in the BBC
everything. Days. Yeah. Paul Eddington, who was also in everything, he played Jerry.
If I'm thinking correctly, it wasn't him and Penelope Keith. They were like husband and wife in like heaps of stuff. Or am I thinking of someone else?
Don't know.
I think they did other shows that either she and Richard Brize or she and
Richard Brize. He's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, she was husband and wife with him in heaps of stuff.
And originally they wanted Peter Bowles to play Tom Good. Yeah, so Peter Bowles was well known too.
I don't know. Richard Brize was so good.
What was he in? I'm trying to think. I can't think of the shows, but it just felt like for an era this, the BBC just made constant shows with Penelope Keith and Richard Brize.
So Penelope Keith was To the Manor Born.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
That was Peter Bowles.
Yes. I can't really imagine
Peter Bowles playing the role of Tom Good. I'm not sure how that would have worked.
Well, also Richard Brize went on to do a lot of work with Kenneth Branagh in his films. So he's in a lot of the early Branagh films. Mm.
In this, the main characters, Tom Good, played by Richard Brize, and Barbara Good, by Felicity Kendall, are both, they're the kind of people starting up their farm and trying to live off the land, and it's the next-door neighbours, Penelope Keith and Paul Eddington, who are both the conservatives that don't really understand what's going on and are trying their best to get them back on track with their life, as how it should be, sort of thing.
To be respectable again.
Yeah, but they're all good friends.
About a week ago or so, we watched the first episode of The Good Life because we were talking about cornflakes packet toys. And Tom Good starts his career... Well, his career is as a designer of cornflakes toys.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's needlessly seeing the pointlessness of his career and going, how do I get away with this? Get away from this.
So what is it that makes... Like, so I'm sure we're about to watch it. We're going to see it for ourselves. But what is it about this show compared to all of the other banal BBC show sitcoms in the 70s that puts this over and above. It had an enduring reputation, but what is it compared to all of the other?
I think it was just the interplay between the characters. I mean, the characters were very warm, and had lots of spark of life, if you like.
So it's predominantly a very character-driven show. You kind of watch it for the characters. And, yeah, it is just, it is good fun.
It has
and
it aged kind of, quite well.
It has, yes.
There's still, there's the odd thing in it where you kind of get that odd moment going, oh, you know, that's a bit unfortunate. But basically it's aged well, whereas a lot of the other comedies from that period haven't.
Yeah.
So I think, I do have a few
issues.
We'll
see if it's aged well after the viewing.
Well, even by the late 80s, there was so many of those shows and you'd see them all on repeats on ABC and you go, oh, what am I watching? You know, what is this? But The Good Life always seemed to have that reputation. And even I didn't realise it was 1975 it started because, early 80s, pretty much everything I know about The Good Life is from Young Ones. Because they talk about it incessantly on the Young Ones. Was it Vivian's favourite show? Or no, I think you just vented about it. But they always seem to bring up The Good Life. And I think they even have one of the segments, they have the intro of The Good Life come up on the screen and start playing. And it's this running joke. But that was five years after it came out.
For that, it plays a complete contrast because The Good Life is so squeaky clean and wholesome that Vivian watching it is
complete turnaround.
Is a comedy thing. Yeah.
So the two of them are just
juxtaposing.
And they're both BBC shows, but aimed at a completely different audience. Yes. I'm guessing
this is so squeaky nice. That
right, and that's why I kind of wonder why is it so enduring if it's that?
Oh, because it plays it well. It does.
It walks a good line.
The warmth of the characters. Really makes it work.
And I mean, obviously you watched it as a kid and you loved it.
Yeah, I loved it.
It's interesting that this was way before your time.
Made
20 years before you were born.
I think some of my annoying personality traits come from Tom Good, I'm going to say. Which you'll understand as you watch it, but you know.
Okay, so if you should be taking notes then.
Yeah. I was clearly taking notes as a child,
I think there's some good relationship guidance in Good Life. In the, you know, the two relationships, really.
Yeah.
The Nara and I was complaining about the sheet, and going, oh my God, I found us on Margo.
Yeah.
That's what she was doing.
And I guess then by my era, it was Keeping Up Appearances, which was really an example of a bad relationship and bad relationships with people. She was a very toxic personality for everyone she was around, but you're saying this is really much the opposite. Yeah. Like it's a,
Even Margot, for all her faults, you can't help but love her in the end. And you can see that she's damaged. She doesn't want to be the kind of person she is in a way. She wants to be better than she is.
So she's redeeming and endearing.
She is. She's redeeming and endearing.
Yes, so it's so successful that the Queen, they had to perform a command performance in front of the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh as the final episode. So they actually constructed an extra final episode. Well, it's called When I'm 65, but that's not the final episode of the Series 4. So it's an extra episode that they did as a command performance. But it went for four series, 75 to 78, and was very successful during that time.
It made the careers of the four people. They weren't well-known actors at all beforehand.
Okay, this is where they started.
Yeah.
I think Penelope Keith was better known than either of the two men.
So whose suggestion was this episode?
This was Angus.
This was mine.
Which episode are we... Sorry, I'm doing your job for you.
Yes, no,
I mean, Bella did your job before you guys.
Actually, did you...
Haven't watched it yet.
So I've chosen literally the second episode. So we've skipped the first episode where Richard Bryce decides to leave his job and him and his partner, Barbara?
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of have a chat and they kind of go, right, is this viable? What are the options? What are the possibilities sort of thing? And they go, you know what, let's go for it. And episode one ended with Richard Bryars, Tom, taking a potato planter, I think it was.
A plough or something.
Across his front lawn.
Oh.
And just upturning the earth on the front lawn as the next door neighbor who's about to head off to work and was picking
watches
up
in
his Volvo. Clutching their pearls. In the Volvo.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
I'm very surprised because you're very much of the, we have to start with the very first episode. You're being very resistant.
I mean, did a second episode for Good Night Sweetheart as well, so...
Yeah, because the first episodes of establish what's happening with the characters, and then the second episode... TV shows with longer episodes will show, like, the introduction part and then a bit of what to expect. Like, Babylon 5, 50-minute episodes. The first episode of season 2 introduces a lot of the characters, sets up the setting, and then gives a story that's in theme with the show. The first episode is very much them deciding what they're going to do, and it's kind of, while it's a little bit of an introduction to the characters, it's not an introduction to the ongoing story.
Yeah.
It's kind of setting up for that.
It also doesn't have all the characters, so Margot isn't in it, for example.
Margot's in the first episode.
She's only right.
So this is the first time you meet Margot then.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we'll get on with it and we'll watch The Good Life.
Yeah.
And season 1, episode 2, and I think it's called Says the Hen or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Wait, has anyone actually seen this before apart from Angus and Justin and Jeanette?
No.
No? Okay.
This is a first time
experience. I don't know if we covered that.
Yeah.
Don't think so.
No, you took one day away from your job and now you're doing it poorly.
Yeah.
You're like, I covered for you once. I have some notes.
For example, keep with the script.
There's a script.
Yeah, okay. You normally ask if people have seen it before and you go around the table and ask.
To be honest, I wasn't letting him get a word in edgewise, so...
That's fair, because you were doing his job for him as well.
It's inquiring minds tonight. Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah. I'm looking to get more information before we get started, so...
Okay. No one asked, but I haven't seen it yet. And I haven't had a chance to shine on this introduction, so yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I mean, I said like 10 words so far this episode as well, so...
There we go. So we haven't even been able to showcase ourselves.
I also like how you're talking about stuff I've got no context for. BBC series in the 1970s.
Yeah,
wow,
it's all actor names and just
we can't relate to.
We should look at the content, not the people behind the content.
Okay, because otherwise we just show the age of, you know, half the podcasters.
Yeah.
Don't rub it in.
Okay, so off we go. We'll watch The Good Life, having found out that Baylor hasn't seen it before.
Do you Billie Eilish know?
No.
Never felt such fucking betrayal.
And with that, we're back.
So that came across as sort of a stage play, really, didn't it?
Yes.
It really felt like it had that some sort of vaudeville sort of nature to it.
And a lot of those 1970s BBC comedy shows, they were kind of like a little bit of a...
stage. They were recording them on a stage.
Yeah.
And so some of it was done on set, obviously, but a lot of it was done on stage in front of the live audience.
Yeah.
So a lot of the laughter isn't actually track laughter. It is actually an audience laughing.
Mm.
And I've never worked out how they did it.
But the writers come from like I'm assuming because of the way it's written, but it comes from a real stage play, farcical background, you know?
Yeah. It does. It's always got that non-cow.
Well, that tradition went on for quite a few years. I mean, Happy Days, for example, was all live audience.
The actual offices were all physical sets there, and then anything that was off-site, they just put up on a TV screen. So
that's how Lionel Woodley did it.
And then these days, you know, back then it was like you knew it was a good one. It was a good show if you had the live audience in there to react. And then these days, you know that a show's not a great comedy if there's a live audience. It's kind of gone the other way.
The canned laughter with the applause sign coming up.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's
laugh
it.
Laugh now.
Yeah, that's it. Laugh on cue. Pretend you're having a good time, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. Not the IT crowd, the
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
Don't compare IT crowd with Big Bang Theory. No.
Different.
And I was thinking that Big Bang Theory
was live terrible audience. With a live audience. I mean, every single sentence they spoke, they had to stop afterwards to wait for the audience to laughter. It was terrible to watch.
If you watch the behind the scenes of things like IT crowd, there are like in the bloopers and stuff, there are just scenes where the audience will just be losing their shit because Moss has arrived at the scene without his glasses. And the actor's not wearing glasses and he needs glasses in real life. He's like really blind without them. And someone had to walk up and go, "Your glasses." And he goes, "Oh yeah, I need those." And everyone's like, "How the hell did you forget your glasses?"
I like Lena and Woodley. They only use canned laughter once. And it's because someone was sitting right underneath the microphone going like... And they couldn't viably release an episode with someone laughing like that. So.
Love it. So it wasn't they actually had a live audience, but there was someone in the live audience that was laughing really bad.
So they put the canned laughter for the exact amount of time that the audience was actually laughing for. For all their scenes, which I think was pretty smart.
Yeah.
The locations where they used to have those was usually pretty sparse. So they were, most of the audience are sitting on just benches. They look like painter's benches. And they're just sitting up on these tiered painter's benches almost.
Very different to what they would have had in the US at the same time.
Yeah,
so
there's
a lot to be said for that. I mean, I know it's network television, so it's probably a different scenario. But I think one of the best stand-up shows I ever went to. We went to some place in Melbourne when we'd gone for the weekend, and I guess it was like a bar, and they had like this stand-up thing every Monday night. And I didn't know what to expect, but I'd heard good things from different podcasts I listened to. And we got there, and it was literally like kegs with cushions on them. Like, it was so random, and everyone was just so bang up for it. No one was complaining about the fact that, you know, you're doing your back in just watching the show. It was probably the best show I ever watched, but it was like, but then you'd have the people at the back that were just, they didn't even get a chair because there wasn't enough kegs to go around, you know. It was just all like, random stools or the little footstools and things like that. It was just anything they could get for people to sit on, they're just crammed in there. But it was just, the people came anyway because the product was so good. People don't complain these days. That would be, it would be a violation.
Terrible. OH&S has it.
Yes.
So, Baylor, what did you think? That's the first time you've seen that. How do you think that went?
Yeah, I get it when you say that you get your comedy from The Good Life and all your relationship advice from The Good Life.
Oh, dear.
Behind the curtains.
What do you mean? I've never suggested we play hide and seek. That's not something I remember doing, at least.
No, but... Okay, so I did lie. We did try and watch The Good Life once, but I was phasing out very heavily at the time, and so I was on my phone at the same time. It was the first episode, and we had started watching it, and Angus got really offended and was like, "This is where I get my relationship advice from, and, you know, this is...
40 years out of date."
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. It explains why he tried to shoot my housemate's chickens once, but...
I don't remember that either.
No. I know. But you wouldn't get a gun license in Australia. You're just not right. But, yeah, no, it was good. The best that I can come up with. I enjoyed it. It was good.
Okay.
It was funny.
What else would you compare it to?
Nothing.
Recent or old school that you've seen, like, what would you compare it to?
I'd compare it to living in my share house before I moved in with Angus. Legitimately, that's like the house that I used to live in, a house where we essentially live off the land. We didn't have a goat, but we had multiple varieties of fresh produce getting grown every single day. And so the housemate that owned the house would bring in like heaps of zucchinis and pumpkins and things like that at random times of the year. So we just eat fresh produce. She had a bucket load of chickens as well, which was good. The chicken with the limp made me laugh. Because if there's a chicken with a limp, the chickens will kill it. They didn't touch on that.
And the chickens will eat it.
And I was looking at that chicken. That chicken didn't have a limp, man.
Light comedy.
It was, it was projecting.
But I mean, that's probably as far as I'd go. That's what I would relate it to. I haven't seen anything quite like that. Like, that's a healthy relationship. Which isn't normally shown on TV. It's always unhealthy relationships.
Isn't that true? And I think that's something that kind of came in. I don't know whether there was a shift somewhere, but then, or whether it's more of an American thing, but it kind of hit a stride where it was always...
Has to be a dysfunctional, broken family.
Yeah. When you actually look at it in a real world scenario, you go, that is really toxic, or there's a power dynamic issue and things like that.
Margo and Jerry, you know, that they snicker and bicker all the time at each other. But deep down.
But they're in sync. It's not like, yes, oh my God, this dude needs to get out of this marriage, or no. Oh geez, like he's talking pretty bad to his wife. Like it's
they're in sync. Yeah, they're balanced.
I think as like them. As far as like a appropriate happy sort of relationship, it'd be in comparison with the Addams Family because that was a happy, but like the original TV series. Because the modern stuff is very dysfunctional. Morticia and Gomez, they still love each other, but they've got to have the unhappy teenage daughter when Wednesday wasn't unhappy or anything like that. Mm. And I realise she wasn't a teenager either. But still, like, that's still got to be upset.
Challenges to that dynamic.
Yeah. And I think segueing off of that, I don't know whether you guys have heard of it or you've seen it. There was a show that came out last year called Kevin Can Go F Himself. And it's basically,
I've heard it. I need to see it. I'm aware of it quite a lot, but I haven't actually seen it.
It's Annie Murphy, who's from Schitt's Creek and who played like the daughter Alexis. And she's like, basically, it's those, I was going to say 90s, but it's not. It's like those sitcoms from the last 20 years where you've got the schlubby husband who basically treats the woman like garbage. And but she's like 10 times more intelligent and articulate than he is. And it's like basically, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond, that kind of dynamic, but it kind of shows that and everything's all glossy and then it will kind of, the sheen will be removed and you can see that she is dying on the inside and she just wants to kill him. She just wants to get out of her life. She is just so incredibly miserable and he's just there yucking with his mates, you know, and it's just like, oh my God. I watched about half of it. I had to stop because it just got so dark. Really dark show. But it's that thing where, it's really refreshing to see a comedy where they're not having to resort to this toxic dysfunction to be able to get laughs.
So there are, I don't know the entirety of these two shows because they're very niche. One of them's incredibly hard to come across. There's an Australian TV show called Woodley by Frank Woodley. He has a family and it's, from all accounts, it's a really good TV show and I haven't heard of it having a toxic trait like side to it at all. It's just like Frank constantly messing up and then apologizing to his kids or having fun with his kids or whatever. There's a more recent one that came out. I've seen it on TikTok a couple of times where it's, I can't remember his name, but he's a blonde-haired guy. He has a high-pitched voice, slightly high-pitched, I think. And he's an Australian comedian. I can't remember his name at all.
Oh, just Josh Thomas?
Yes, Josh Thomas. Thank you. He's in a TV show.
Oh, is that the one where... He's in a couple. Is that the one where he's...
A foster parent... And he has a house of foster children.
I think what happened is he was a brother. He just became.
He's a half brother. Yeah. His biological father died, and he's ended up inheriting these American kids or something.
Yeah. And from what I've seen of that, it's absolutely fantastic. It's a very healthy relationship, and depicts relationships now and what would be healthy to do with these kids now. And it's like, I'm feeling sad. Can I have a hug? And the child goes, no, thank you. I don't like hugging because I was always forced to. And so he's like, well, how do I get that sort of love from a hug? And they end up having a food fight or something like that. And so it's a fun comedy way to show a healthy relationship with people. So I think that might be the closest that The Good Life would get nowadays in current TV because nothing else I've seen really comes close to it.
Just Googling it now. It's on Stan. I know it's on Stan.
Oh, okay.
Everything's going to be okay.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's and because then he'd come off of Please Like Me, which was massive. I never got a chance to watch it. But that was an incredible show, apparently. It was critically acclaimed internationally. And then from there, he got this American show.
He's a very funny young man. And he's really good and smart as well.
Alex, what did you think of that?
I think...
First time seeing?
I always love when we talk about the stuff and everybody else tells the stuff that I would say.
Sorry.
That's okay.
We need to swap order that we go around the table.
That's the thing. Like, I tend to realise that I tend to be the least verbose when describing this sort of shows. But I think it's sweet. But I'm also thinking, if you have a sweet kind of relationships that you see in shows. For some reason, I happen to remember, was it Lillian Marshall from How I Met Your Mother, quite sweet as well.
Yes.
So there's a few sweet relationships, but that where the idea of them being lovey-dovey is point of the characters.
Lillian Marshall from How I Met Your Mother did have that kind of break sort thing. Yeah. There's kind of regular conflicts, but it was an
ebb and flow. Like it wasn't, it was a little bit more realistic.
Yeah, it was a realistic they flow and still kind of remained.
In a few episodes' time, they get this kitchen range that's super rusty and she has to clean it. She spends all day cleaning
that is literally
it.
The next episode. And so she's there cleaning the range and Tom's going, oh, birds are eating our seeds. How can I fix this? And so he kind of goes on this journey of kind of trying different things and playing around and trying to think outthink the problem and having a lot of fun doing that while she's just
going in the filthy old range.
It's just kind of having a tired day and is not up to the dad hand, and he's doing his thing and being happy and stuff and not really noticing anything. And in the end, she just wanders off and sits down and he goes, oh, okay, whoops, and then fixes the situation. And then in the end, they just sit down together and have a hot cup of coffee. Which on the range.
Issue. And it is a beautiful episode.
So, Jeanette, is that how you remember it?
Yes, yeah. I watched it a year ago.
How much did you watch a year ago?
All of it.
All of it?
Yeah. Right. So I just put it on one day and I thought, I just wondered how it would stand up. And I could stop watching it. I just watched
it. I watched it about six, 7 years ago.
Do you think it stands up for as well?
I think it's focusing on how odd the goods life is compared to the slightly hoity-toity, I want to punch them in the face neighbours.
Yeah.
It's leaning on heavily the idea that them trying to live off the grid is such a bizarre, abnormal thing, and that's what I think is dating it more than anything else.
Mm.
And the fashion.
Those dresses, though, I would wear both of those dresses that those ladies were wearing.
Yeah. 70s dresses.
They look cute.
Yeah. Margot's the high fashion, whereas Barbara tends to wear clothes that you could, blink.
That's the thing. Like,
Margot had the girls out. She looked chef's kiss. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah. The downside is her personality cancelled out her good looks.
I guess I grew up at that time, so to me, I don't like the fact. It's like the 50s tables. We're talking about the PA and the 50s tables. And we were saying, I find them depressing. I said, yeah, I did too. Because my family had those tables. It was what people had when I was a kid. And it's like,
I get it. I only recently just got it because I've seen a lot of younger generations, Gen Zers, going, oh my God, check out this retro style I'm rocking. And it's like double denim and the jelly heels and stuff. And I'm like, dude, stop. And then they're like doing all the hair stuff that we did back in the 90s. And I'm like, bro, there is a reason that we bagged ourselves about that now.
I remember you saying your sister used to dress retro and wear the clothes that I used to wear that they wore on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I'm like, man, I feel old.
Did she? No, she wears like old Dangerfield stuff.
Oh, no, I thought at the time you were talking about when we did the Buffy episode. That was a few years ago.
I think some of the clothing was close to hers.
Yeah.
Been a while.
Yeah. So we seem to be getting a bit of a consensus that seems okay for modern audiences. What do you think, Angus? Is it?
Lisa's shaking her head and weighing up the options.
I was thinking if I had options of shows to watch, I would watch Good Place over Good Life.
Oh, but then again, Good Place over Archer's everything from pretty much any era. So it's not a good fair comparison.
I don't think it would be the type of show that I would just put on and watch. I think it's the type of show I would put on while I'm doing other stuff and I just need background noise. I don't think I would be. But then it was never, that type of thing was never my thing. Like, I wouldn't sit down and watch any other kind of sitcom that we've described. That's just, maybe it's just not my bag. So,
yeah, sitcoms,
I think after, like, a really, really long day of doing things and I just want to veg and zombie out.
Yeah, turn the brain off for a bit.
I would be happy to just sit down and watch it, like, lie on the couch and brain dead it for a bit.
I think the feeling you get from it, though, you know, like sometimes you just watch a show because of the feeling you get when you watch it. And I think this puts out some really nice vibes.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Content vibes.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
When we watch it, we tend to be doing other things. So we're not just sitting down. Yeah.
But then again, that also comes with familiarity with the show. Yes. Like you would have sat down. Did you sit down and watch Lower Decks when you watched Lower Decks?
Were
you
sitting down the time? Maybe the first couple of times.
And then now
I'm into like the fifth, sixth watch.
Yeah, you just put it on in the back.
The show will drag you in or it won't. And so if you're doing other things and it doesn't drag you in, then it doesn't drag you in.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So I've got, at the moment, I'm watching 30 Rock as I go to sleep. You know, it's like, okay. And I can put that on and drift off to sleep because I've watched it 2 or 3 times already, you know, and it's like I'm not missing anything. And then the next night I can put it back on the start of the episode that I've just missed, you know, and it's just...
Wondering how well-aged 30 Rock is now because of a lot of the humour may have dated a bit.
Oh, yeah, there's certain aspects of it you kind of go, oh, you know, but I think it was always supposed to be that kind of weird, edgy Saturday Night Live kind of humour anyway.
Do you know what probably hasn't aged well? Pizza. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah. Honestly, that was never... I didn't feel like it aged well the minute it came out on SBS, to be honest. So you're talking about, was it Fat Pizza or whatever?
Yeah,
Fat
Pizza. I think it's just the fact that it aired when, well, I at least was a teenager, and therefore that's the dominant of like, oh, yeah, it's big and it's cheesy.
I didn't find it my type of humour.
Oh,
no.
At the risk of sounding snobby, but it's a little lowbrow.
Yeah, it's
the point. That's the point. But I did find somebody uploaded onto YouTube old episodes of Life Support. That aged. That has aged.
It's aged badly?
No, it's just there's a specific kind of edginess that is, yeah, it's a lot of in there that's like, that does not work now, please.
I enjoy things that have aged, though, because it shows how far we've come.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. It's almost beyond cringe and more like this is unacceptable. Like, there's one where Sigourney shows you how to put on makeup to hide the bruises that your partner's given you.
It was always a really edgy show.
Yeah.
That was the same character that was always trying to steal your man, you know? She was...
And there's still one segment I remember where the doctor character was convincing the guy to not hurt his hands and instead use psychological torture for his domestic abuse. And that's as easy as it got, but it's still, that's the kind of humor.
Well, when we talked about Life Support, we were comparing it with that Brass Eye.
Yeah.
It's that real kind of like, oh, is this a little too far, or we're just tap dancing around the edge, isn't it?
Yeah.
So does anybody at the table have any relations or friends or anything that are into self-sufficiency?
We have a couple of years.
Are old enough to remember this show?
My parents. My dad. Not necessarily my mum. My mum just went along for the ride.
I think it would be a really interesting exercise to just ask them about the show and what they think about it.
We can ask Alice and Joe tomorrow.
Well,
actually, they want
to tell you about it once.
We did. I don't think Katie's seen it. I think it was a show that I was actually going to... One of our friends, does the whole sufficiency.
It would have been the generation above her.
Yeah, it'd be a generation.
It would have been the generation back. And I doubt Katie's parents.
Your dad, maybe?
Yeah, no, definitely. But he would have been like, oh, no, I was into this before The Good Life. He would have been like all hipster about it. But that would have been the same era. Like, so he got into what is now called permaculture. I don't think it was called permaculture back in the 70s when he learned it. And he learned from one of the big pioneers and all the rest of it. And so then that was the thing. It's like, oh, bought this dilapidated house on a couple of acres on the outskirts of Gawler, which is now, it was actually like in the middle of Lindock Road. So it's now in the middle of Gawler. But yeah, and then had the hobby farm and we had the chickens and a dozen sheep and goats and this and that, and just worked on the land. I grew up and...
You are Felicity Good. Oh my God.
I grew up... I have a black thumb. I can't grow anything. But I would grow up where Dad would be like, let's make a stir fry for dinner. And he would go into the veggie garden and pick all the veggies and then make a stir fry completely from scratch from the veggies. So, yeah.
Mm.
I don't have that luxury.
Yeah. It's how Katie's family mostly grew up. But they grew up in a generation maybe before yours. Mm. So they're out in the country. Mm. And when I say yours, I am pointing to Jeanette. Yeah. I'm very sorry. They grew up out in the country. Katie grew up with, like, strict, we have no electricity after 5 p.m.
Whoa!
Oh.
Sort of thing. So she was using candlelight once the lights went off as she was growing up. And she's around 36. I don't know her actual age. But, you know, she's not old.
She's younger than me.
That's the thing. And so everything that she'd grown up with, she didn't... Yeah, she wouldn't have seen this sort of thing. And so she's quite used to living off the land and living in a farm and living, like, pretty much in the Dark Ages, I would hate to say it, but yes, in the Dark Ages before electricity became such a normal thing.
Like, friend of Justin's, their chickens were named lunch, breakfast, lunch and dinner to get the kids used to the idea that they're going to eat them. They were parents, I think, were trying to do the self-sufficiency thing. And a guy was talking about sleeping out in the veranda of the house with the goats around him. And this guy was such a suit looking individual. He always looked, you know, comfortable in a suit, and he always got offered the supervisor's jobs because he looked the part. But he grew up with animals. His parents were trying to be self-sufficient and do the good life thing.
And he was surrounded by teachers that were doing the self-sufficiency thing. Yes, and all our
teachers were trying to do the self-sufficiency thing. So they'd come up from Melbourne to Ballarat, and they'd get land, which was cheap in Ballarat. Yeah. And so they had sheep and goats, and they were helping, like they were bartering with each other and sharing produce.
What do they call that now? Tree change. When you move from the city to the country again. It was sea change, and then it became tree change because you'd move to the country and you'd buy some land.
And they wanted to make their own wine as well.
Of course you do.
But they fed the local
prison toilet wine.
They're teachers.
They were feeding all the local possums because they weren't used to wildlife coming from Melbourne, and the possums started eating all their plants. But the possums were cute.
So, Alex, are you surrounded by self-sufficiency types?
Not quite, but we do have, my dad decides to grow a few things in the backyard. Like, we have a worm farm, and we also have a whole bunch of natural stuff in our garden, so we end up with lots of birds and other kinds of wildlife in our backyard. But we only really grow, I forget the name of the vegetable.
You're not the green thumb.
It's more, I probably could, but I'm just not that kind of, I'm not interested in that kind of side of things. I want to kind of do something vaguely self-sufficiency, but not in terms of growing food, just in terms of, like, say, when the apocalypse happens in the next 5 years. Okay, what skill should I get so that I can be useful afterwards?
I thought that you just need to have a purpose so that when you're in the post-apocalyptic era, you can make yourself useful and
It's either going to be crochet or bookmaking. I'm not sure which one.
Bookmaking.
Because, like, I've seen a few tutorials online. It's like just sewing the pages together. It's like, oh, that's cute. I could totally do that. But
My biggest interest in self-sufficiency is basically, like, we should get solar panels, and then that's end of sentence.
So, Lisa, Justin hasn't asked you what you thought of it.
Yeah, well, like I said, it was good. I'm not one to tend to watch a sitcom, so, yeah. But I get the hype now. I actually do get the hype. Yeah, because I was always like, why do people get so excited about this? I don't get it. Like, why this and not any other show that came out around the same time? So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's the quality of the scripts and the interaction between the actors and just the general positivity it all radiates.
Yes,
it does.
And I think that's the thing. I think even when they're faced with the kind of veiled antagonism over what they're doing, they just rebut with kindness. And niceness, like none of it gets argy, or it's like, oh, we'll show you, you know, we'll do something nice. It's not like they start yelling at them. It's just you know what, let's just go do us then.
There's the scene with the pigs. So they get pigs, and Margot insists they get rid of them, and she calls in the council, whatever, so they get rid of the pigs, and then
she finds out they're really
upset with her. They're really angry with her, and then when they mention them going to the abattoir, she's like, what? No, they can't go to the abattoirs.
Where do you think they're going to go?
Rescue the pigs. And she's really, you know, quick, Jimmy, get the car. You know, and they're totally on board with saving the pigs. And in the end, Tom comes back with the pigs and he puts the thing on the table. And it's like, oh, you saved the pigs. And everyone's really joyous. And they all walk out. And then he turns to the pigs and says, now, don't you ever tell them that you're not Pinky and Perky.
If you ever let them know you're not Pinky and Perky, then it's sausage time.
So, yeah, they always do resolve the conflicts in the end, and they remain good friends, and there's a lot of kindness between them.
Yes.
You know, Mark is always well-intentioned, and she is kind.
In a way that it would have been a lot easier for them, for her to not be, to have that horrible neighbour that's always trying to do them in, you know.
I think even just her accent is giving me vibes.
Yes. But that's what she did.
That was her stick.
That was her shtick the whole way through, wasn't it?
She was a character.
She always kind of played that character with that accent, and she was always that abrasive one that people would butt heads with.
In to the manor born. She was the previous owner of the entire manor estate.
Oh.
And so she was the actual aristocrat there. Yeah. And so she lived in a little side house. She was down on her luck, and she'd sold to a millionaire.
And it was like new money, wasn't it? Old money versus new money.
And she was the old money.
Ah.
Yeah, so always the same kind of thing.
It's the same thing, I've heard of it, but never watched it.
But of course,
it.
All these actors are probably all on stage as well.
And she did a lot of stage work. Yeah, they're all doing all these kinds of roles.
And I think that's where
Richard Wise met Kenneth Branagh, would have been on stage, and then he was in every film that he made for a few years.
Okay, so I think we'll.
Well, no, food.
Yes, I'm going to go to the food.
I'd say this has to be it's a classic. It's warm, it's nice, it's friendly. I'd say, you know, good old shepherd's pie.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to say goat's milk. Goat's butter. It is a shepherd's pie, though, isn't it?
It really is a shepherd's pie, yeah.
Good old hearty English meal.
Yes. Yep. Or as Margot would call it, a rustic pot roast.
Yes, it could be either.
This is 70s.
Yeah.
I love it.
70s pot roast. Goodbye, and we'll see you next episode.
Yes. Have a good life.
That was terrible.
That was great. You don't know what good is.